Grafton Street is a street right in the heart of Dublin, where if you're going shopping, you will hear the sound of music always. There's always buskers playing on Grafton Street. Many a musician starts life off there, hoping that one day they'll be noticed and heard by someone famous. Not so long ago, you too just decided to turn up on Grafton Street and play just a couple of days before Christmas. So a couple of days ago, there was a video from Grafton Street that went viral, a beautiful story. There was a young busker called Padraig Cahill, and he was playing his guitar. And all of a sudden, he notices walking along the street Glen Hansard, who is a famous Irish musician. He wrote the musical Once, which is now this massive Broadway musical. It's gone global. And Padraig sees Glen Hansard walking down the street. And he maybe cheekily asks Glen if he will come and sing a duet with him. And they choose to sing Falling Slowly from the musical Once. And what follows is this really haunting duet of this famous celebrity musician and this unknown busker who is just singing his heart out. You know, his dream has come true. And for the most part, he plays along, but just right at the end of the song, you can tell that the moment has got to this young busker because he just makes this face. Like, I can't believe this is happening to me. It's just a beautiful, beautiful video. The thing is, many a celebrity would have walked right past and wouldn't have done it. Many a celebrity might have said, you know, the key's not right, that microphone is not set up the right way. But Hansard, in his humility, joins this unknown busker in this beautiful duet. And it takes humility for someone great to join in with this unknown and make music. It takes humility for God to come down and meet us, the unknowns, and to invite us to join in the divine chorus. It takes humility from God. And it was Augustine who realized that this was the quality that God had toward us. Augustine believed that one of the few qualities that could break down a people who had put up all these barriers of pride. It takes this disarming humility that comes down from the eternal home to join us, the unknowns, and make beautiful music with us. The merciful humility of God. Well, I've been reflecting a lot this week on what it means to be at home, living in a different context, a different culture, and maybe many of you have moved around over the course of your life. And many people today maybe have several places they can call home. But I've come to the conclusion that home is that place where you're able to have honest, open conversation with the people around you because they love you in an unconditional way. Whenever you move to a new city or whenever you go to a new job or something that's new, your instinct is to want to try and impress. Whether you're trying to prove yourself that you're up to the task ahead or prove to yourself that you can fit in, there are many different ways we take on the pressure to be something that we're not. Until very soon we come to wear so many masks, we begin to wonder, who am I? And am I me or am I a shadow of the reality? Now contrast that with the conversations you have around the family table, because that's where honesty takes place, when you put on a new outfit and you turn to your spouse and say, how do I look in this? They might try and cover it up a bit, but when you ask your sister or your brother, how do I look in this? You can guarantee they will tell you exactly, it's a no from me. Wasn't it Martin Luther King who said, the richer we've become materially, the more we've become morally and spiritually. We've learned to fly in the air like birds and swim the sea like fish, but we haven't learned the simple art of living together as brothers and sisters, how to live at home. And so in our story today, Jesus is unmasking the relationships of home, of what it's like to be in family. Jesus and his friends, as you know, have been on this long journey towards Jerusalem. They're in Samaria. They're in unfamiliar enemy territory. And the religious people around Jesus, maybe they're trying to impress Jesus with what seems to be a reasonable question, but it actually identifies the mask that they're wearing, that they grumble and mutter with Jesus. This man is welcoming sinners and eats with them. Why should Jesus contaminate himself by playing music with the unknowns? And this word, this grumble that they have, this Greek word muttering, it's the same word that was used in another travel narrative early on in the Bible, when the children of Israel were also being led through dangerous, unmapped territory in the wilderness. They too were grumbling and muttering. They felt disoriented and helpless. And so rather than fling themselves on the abundant mercy of God, they did what we all try and do. They looked to that place of entitlement. We deserve better. God, take us back to Egypt, because it was actually better there than what we have today. When our self-identity gets disoriented, we look for safety in moralism. And the problem with this posture of self-righteousness, we might see it in other people, but we rarely see it in ourselves, because it's embedded in words that seem righteous. Jesus, you should be hanging out with a more deserving audience. We never like to be labeled as self-righteous, do we? It's almost easier to be the younger prodigal in the story. And Eugene Peterson says, the people of Israel murmured, not because they were bad and evil, but because they were good and scared. Now that catches me right there, good and scared. Does that describe you? You're good, but you're scared about what the future holds? It's very hard to soften these edges of someone who is good and scared, because that's when we get the boundaries erected so high. I've been working hard. I've been doing this job for years. I've been organist in this place all my life. I know the inner workings of this place and how it should go, and I'm scared of what's happening to me. I'm scared of what's happening to my family. I feel worried about the future. That's self-righteousness talking. And that's when we need the merciful humility of God to step in to our lives. Now, the older brother would have watched all that was happening with the younger brother coming home. He would have seen the father lifting up his skirts and running to his younger son, this younger brother who had doubly shamed his dad. First he asks for the inheritance, as if the dad was dead already. But then rather than make good with the property, he sells it and takes the money to this far-off country to do very un-Jewish things. And abandoning a father in his old age was one thing, but going to a city and squandering wealth was another. This brought shame not just to the family, but it would have brought shame to the entire community. It would have been right for this younger brother to have come home and worked in order to redeem his debts. But what does his older brother see? Well, his father is running to meet him. He's lifting up his skirts and running in the most undignified way to his son. And it should have been the son bowing down to kiss the feet of the father to show repentance, to show that he was really sorry. But instead, his father throws his arms around the son and kisses him. He puts a ring on his finger and a best robe around him. And I'm sure the older brother just hated what he was witnessing. His father, who had already been shamed, was now taking on more shame and disrespect on his own shoulders again. This was scandalous. And each time we're getting to the heart of this self-righteous matter, because this story was for the ears of the grumbling people who were listening in. Gradually, they're getting pulled closer and closer and closer to the heart of the matter. First of all, you have the story of the lost sheep, 1 in 100. And then it gets closer, the story of the lost coin, 1 in 10. And now you get pulled closer to the lost son, 1 in 2. And you can imagine the religious people in their own minds thinking, well, I know what we should be doing when things are lost. We should be taking better care of things and holding on more tightly to our faith so that you don't lose it. Little do they realize that there's going to be this fourth story thrown in for good measure, the story of how the older brother reacts. Because this story begins to mirror their own posture of self-righteousness. A story of a son who's never left home. A story of a son who is so good, but he's alienated in three ways. He's alienated from his father, from his brother, from his community. Three triple alienations. A brother on the surface of things has never done anything wrong, who plays by the rules, who's a hard worker, and yet he's lost. Now, traditionally, this older brother should have been at the master of ceremonies spot, celebrating that the younger son has come home. But you know that there's something deeply wrong with this picture in the relationship between father and son, because the brother hears the music, and rather than go to his dad and say, what's going on here? He calls the servant and asks what is going on. There's this unnatural suspicion. And the two main qualities coming out in this son is anger, angry at everything, whether things are going right, whether things are going wrong. He's angry, ready to snap, ready to bite back. But also not just anger, but a lack of joy. Not being able to laugh, not being able to enjoy the party. When good things happen, you're holding back, saying to yourself, well, good things can't happen around here. And this stormy attitude dominates how this older brother thinks. He can't even pretend to go in and enjoy the party. He can't even put on the mask. Everything is spoiled. So what does the running father do? The father who's already been ashamed and taken on the shame in many ways. How do you break down the defenses of someone who spent their life building them up? The merciful humility of God. Sometimes when you see a child sulking out in the garden, what I often do is I just wait and let them cool down and let them come in. But this father is different. He goes out to the older brother. In love, it says he comes alongside him and pleads with him. And there's just a beautiful little word here, come alongside in the Greek. It means parakaleo, which means come alongside. And you know, that is the word for the Holy Spirit, paraclete. The one who comes so softly, the one who woos, the one who welcomes, the one who invites and draws us back into communion with God. The older brother, all he can see is his own works. Father, I have been a slave for you, and you never gave me as much as a young goat. And this son of yours, notice how he's not my brother anymore, this son of yours, he squandered your property with prostitutes, and now you're killing the fatted calf? The father gently replies, but son, everything I have is yours. Wasn't it right that we should celebrate that the dead son has become the alive son? The son has come up from the valley of dead bones? Now, up until this point, all these lost stories have got their closure. The lost sheep has been found, brought home rejoicing. The lost coin also was found, and there was a celebration. The lost son, the prodigal son, celebration is happening. But this other lost son, we don't get closure on that story. We don't know what happens next. Because you see, Jesus is gently pulling in all our grumbling. He's pulling in all the murmuring hearts of the religious people who came to church as worshipers. And Jesus is gently getting alongside you. He's looking for us to provide the ending. And as long as we think we have it all together, that safety net of moral rectitude, then there's that safe distance and we are still lost. And this older brother lostness is a frightening syndrome, because you can be right at the heart of church and be good but scared. You can be angry and joyless. And this is why we go through Lent, because the story of Lent is the story of our traveling in a way that reminds us of our elder brother limitations, of our own mortality, that life can change in an instant, no matter how hard we work all our lives. Like these two prodigal sons, we can think we're doing just fine. We think we have the resources to get us through in life, wanting to believe all our hard work has earned us something. But here's the surprise. Not only do we have the running Father who comes alongside us, but we have the Son, Jesus Christ, who left his inheritance, left his home, and he ran and kept a pace with us in the distant country. Jesus is present with us at every turn of the road. As Jane Williams in her book, The Merciful Humility of God, writes, the life of Jesus is the life of the God who leaves his home to go and be with the prodigals. And the cross breaks apart all our previous understandings of God and confronts us with the reality of how God acts, as opposed to the fantasy of how we would act if we were God. Love that is earned may always be forfeited, but a love that is based in the heart and the character of the one who loves can never be lost. So as we remember that we are dust, we come close to the fact that our lives will pass into nothingness unless they are held in the eternal meaning of God. We started this morning thinking about home, that picture of home being a place where you can communicate honestly with your loved ones, and it takes a certain amount of humility to do that. Some of us will go through life and will never be fully sure of what our loved ones think about us because we come from reserved cultures. In rural Ireland, I worked alongside the one-word farmers. And for years, I would pass them in their Land Rovers and I'd be waving. Was all you'd get. Until one year, I knew I'd got in when I got what we call in Ireland the farmer's wave. Now, they don't lift their hands all off the steering wheel. They lift their three fingers. But you see, God never leaves us in doubt of his feelings for us. He never is like that. He's not reserved. The merciful, humble God, he runs towards us. He comes alongside us. He shows us the scars in his hands as the mark of love toward us. He came to redeem us and restore us and bring us into his family. Jesus came to restore and redeem family. Just look at Adam's family. Cain, also seared with a jealousy for his brother Abel that was so deep he murdered him and spilt the blood on the ground. And Hebrews 12 says, it's through Jesus we come into the family because of the mediator of a new covenant and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. Somehow this cross absorbs all the pain, all the bloodshed of family life, and redeems it. And my friends, this is the church, this is the family of Jesus Christ, where pain and shame and bleeding hearts are taken up through the Father's love and brought into this beautiful, redeemed family. You might never have the experience of Padraic Cahill on that day in Grafton Street where one of your musical heroes comes and plays with you, but you can have the experience of God, God of the universe coming alongside you, the merciful, humble God, breaking down your defenses and showing the full extent of his love. And our vision for COS is that this is the home that demonstrates that. Where in the safety of the unconditional love of God, you can have honest conversations about who you are, not who you pretend to be. St. Augustine once lost one of his best friends, and he was in despair. But then he wrote, "Why would you give your heart to anything but God? All human beings pass away. Do not let your happiness depend on something you're going to lose. If love is to be a blessing, not a misery, it must be for the only beloved who will never pass away. A sincere, gripping, renewing love that will not fade but deepen through the annals of time." Are you good but scared? Do you come a bit angry, joyless? You can't enter into celebration. Come to the table. Experience the wonderful, merciful humility of God. Because we know we love because he first loved us. Amen.